Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, where he's left his heart, Golden Gate, Gabriel Montoya. Gabe, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you. I've actually found my heart, though. They weren't playing the Rams game at the bar I go to, the 500 Club, but they were playing the Niners loss, so that was actually kind of better than watching my Rams struggle. So, hey, good weekend. Not a lot of fights, but, you know, it's the little things.
Yeah, and folks, I'm fatigued and sunburned. I spent this weekend in the beautiful city of Miami, Florida, where the Miami Hurricanes held on for dear life and nearly choked away a game with an epic meltdown. But hey, Canes win. Brad Kaya, Heisman Trophy, down the line. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to ask us a question or comment on Twitter, you could do so at SteveUCNLive or at Gabriel_Montoya. We'll open up the phone line soon. Here's the bottom line. There really isn't all that much to talk about, but we're going to be here for a regularly scheduled 90 minutes and up to 2 hours, depending on the phone lines. But, folks, I'll be completely honest. With Monday Night Football on and Andre Johnson and Frank Gore on my television, oh, and that other guy, Andrew Luck, a shorter show would not be the worst thing for the Kimster. But let's get started with round number one. It's the PBC on NBC from Birmingham, Alabama, in the heart of the SEC. For the WBC heavyweight title, Deontay Wilder, with a record of 34-0, 33 knockouts, takes on Frenchman Johnny Duopas with a record of 32-2. Gabe, being the consummate professional that you are, even if you're not regularly on the boxing beat, you were actually doing some tape study, some video review of this fighting Frenchman. Give us your view of Johnny D.
You know, he's steady. You know, he's got a jab. He doubles and triples it. He's kind of stiff, a little bit upright. I mean, he went majority decision with Manuel Char, which kind of tells you everything you need to know. You know, he also lost to a guy that was 13-0 in his previous fight, you know, the month before. That also tells you everything you need to know. I think he's, you know, Johan Duopas might mean, you know, just another guy in his language. I just don't think that this guy's got much of a chance. I mean, I think he could go rounds. He could be sturdy. He hasn't been knocked out. I'll give him that. But he's got a couple losses. And I think at this stage, it's kind of a good opponent for Deontay Wilder in the sense that he needs more rounds. The last thing that guy needs is highlight reel knockouts that don't teach him anything. So hopefully Duopas can give him, you know, some sort of a brief challenge, maybe ask some questions of him, get it to the middle of rounds and see what happens. But I expect Wilder to win this one going away.
Here's what we know about Johnny D. His two losses, as you mentioned, they came against Francesco Pianeta and Ekran Tepper. Not exactly Ron Lyle and Ernie Shavers. And like, as you also mentioned, his last win against was Manuel Char, which arguably is probably his quote-unquote best victory. I don't know what the odds are. I'm assuming that they are very, very steep against him. But remember this, Deontay Wilder is still a vulnerable guy for as much power and as athleticism as he possesses. He's also a guy with the whiskers. He's not exactly Scrap Iron Johnson. And in his first title defense back on June 13th, Gabe, Eric Molina was supposed to be absolutely steamrolled in no more than two or three rounds. He actually had a moment, a really big moment, and he lasted nine rounds. I expect him to win because, as I like to say, when it comes to adroit matchmaking, there's a reason why they chose him. The question that I have is, will they stick in another title defense by the end of 2015? I'm hearing he could be going in December, but come mid-January, He then has a scheduled mandatory defense that he must start to negotiate along with his representatives against Alexander Povetkin. And, Gabe, this is where I think things get a little bit intriguing because we've spoken about this. The rumors are that the PBC will dump the traditional belts and basically create their own title, a la the UFC. Well, Gabe, if there's ever a time and place and with a fighter to do it with, wouldn't it be perfect to do it with the American version of the heavyweight champion of the world, who then faces a mandatory in Alexander Povetkin, who would probably be favored, but then if you just conveniently start your own titles at that point, well, that's not an issue anymore.
Yeah, I think that's it's you know particularly with a name brand title like the heavyweight championship of the world. A lot of people don't know Klitschko. Somebody just the other day, you know, was asking like, "What's going on with the heavyweights?" And this person was a pretty serious boxing fan, you know. But that division has fallen off so much, and it's fallen, you know, overseas really. That American audiences have just kind of tuned out, and they've been paying attention to the middleweight classes, you know, everything from really 160 on down, really 54 and 47 in the reign of Floyd and Pacquiao. So, you know, I think it's. If I was going to do it with a guy, it would be Deontay Wilder. To me, I've said this in the past, nothing shows that Richard Schaefer was not operating in the best interest of Golden Boy, like the fact that they didn't sign Deontay Wilder to an exclusive contract, yet developed him on their cards. So, no, I think that's a pretty solid guess on your part.
So there you have it, the PBC on NBC in Birmingham, Alabama. That is Saturday night. And speaking of the PBC, Gabe, I don't know how big of a story it was, but given the fact that the September slate is very, very lean, as I like to say, leaner than Kate Moss on a cocaine bender, my eyebrows were raised when it turned out that it was revealed by Lance Pugmire of the LA Times that Al Heyman and the PBC, they will not be able to take their various lawsuits from the hands of Golden Boy and Top Rank to arbitration, but this thing will go to trial, meaning that you're going to have discovery and you're going to have depositions. As they say in the Olympic Games, let the games begin.
What an interesting side note to this, I mean, or just kind of a variable here, is that what happens when Al Heyman fighters are called? Because as I understand it, it's in the contract. They can't speak ill of Al. There's going to be a lot of people taking the fifth.
Wow. It's going to be interesting.
On the grounds that it may get you fired?
Well, you know, there's a thing called taking an oath. And I've never really been on trial yet. But when you are on the stand, you put that hand on the Bible, and they basically say, you're not going to lie, right? And you say yes, and you go from there. What happens when a Leon Margulies is deposed? What happens when a Lou DiBella is deposed? Wow. I'm going to say one thing right now. They didn't get me a credential for Mayweather-Pacquiao. I could live with that. Oh, but if they could get me ringside access for these depositions, it would more than make up for it. Moving on with the next round, we're going through some news and notes here. Mayweather Berto did between 400,000 to 550,000 pay-per-view buys, depending on who you believe, whether it's Kevin Ioli or Dan Raphael. Let's split it down the middle. Let's say it did 475,000 buys. First of all, Gabe, it is a far cry from the 4 million they did on May 2nd. I think it shows you two things. Even with a guy like Floyd Mayweather, who has clearly established himself as the pay-per-view king of this past generation, that A, the dance partner matters, and B, there is certainly a backlash to Mayweather based on the Pacquiao fight, whether that's fair or not. Agree or disagree?
Completely agree. You know, and you can't call this a success with other guys if they did 500, thousand pay-per-views or 475, let's say. You could probably call it a success because they wouldn't be making 32 to 34 million, or as Floyd says, 70 million, you know, with all the pay-per-view upside, and the other guy making four, and that's just the main event. I don't see how you could financially call that a success. Enough to see all the rest of the numbers. But as Stephen Espinoza of Showtime pointed out in an interview, this was probably more along the lines of fulfilling a contract than making a super fight, which is fantastic, mm-hmm. considering it's a pay-per-view. But, you know, I think it's, you know, good riddance. Maybe we can start over again with a normal pay scale and get some good fights on pay-per-view.
You know, I've said this before on other platforms that I think Floyd Mayweather is very savvy in this sense, Gabe. He understands the public sentiment. He knows how to gauge the public's temperature. And I think he even senses, and again, whether it's fair or not, for some reason he's taking the lion's share of the blame for that non-fight against Manny Pacquiao. And I've been on record. It takes two not to tango. I really believe, to me, they both deserve equal blame for what did or did not take place on that particular night. But I think he realizes that he needs to take a hiatus. He needs to build up some anticipation. And right now, I do believe that there is a fatigue over Mayweather, given the fact that if he's not going to fight certain guys, namely Amir Khan, maybe a Tim Bradley, Terrence Crawford, or some of the other hungry young lions, as he would say, in the PBC that have much better credentials than an Andre Berto, you're absolutely right, Gabe. This was the sixth fight of a six-fight deal, and they felt like, you know what, let's just get this over with. Gabe, in talking to Bob Arum last week, Manny Pacquiao, a couple of things here, has given Bob Arum a direct order that my first fight next year has to be within the second week of April because he's going to be doing some campaigning, as Pacquiao is the ever-present politician. And the names in play, they're now five now. Amir Khan, Kell Brook, Terrence Crawford, Lucas Matisse, Juan Manuel Marquez. Gabe, I pose this question to you. Which fight do you think is the most likely, but which is the fight you'd like to see yourself personally?
That's a good question. I'd like to see. I mean, Postal's not a gimme.
Yeah.
So Matisse's got to get through that. I think I would love to see that fight, though, just because I think it's evenly matched. Matisse is not the fleetest of foot, but he can box, you know, a bit. He's really setting up his big power punches, and he's aggressive. I think that matchup with Manny would be fantastic. Matisse Pacquiao would be ridiculous. I still want to see more from Crawford at the weight. That's another fun fight. I think, you know, a top rank benefits the most from Crawford Pacquiao, but I'd almost want to do that in another fight. And certainly Marquez is probably what we'll end up with. But I'd be curious, considering all the scrutiny that Floyd Mayweather is under, which really is coming out of that Hauser piece more than anything, more than the IV, but it's his TE ratio in those two fights that seem dramatically low and indicative of potential PED use in the past. How's Marquez going to get through without such scrutiny? And I think he stays away. I think he doesn't pull a Lance Armstrong. I don't think he goes for another Pacquiao fight, knowing that it'll probably be VADA tested.
Gabe, in my opinion, I think the fight that is most likely is Terrence Crawford because he is associated with Top Rank. I think there's a natural passing of the baton, and it's a win-win situation for Robert J. Arum and his company. Pacquiao comes up with a big victory against Crawford, and all of a sudden he's quote-unquote back. And Bob did reveal to me he has three fights left on a contract with Pacquiao. He believes that Manny Pacquiao will fulfill all three. Again, that's just his opinion. But like
that's
you, Gabe, the one fight I'd like to see if I had my druthers based on style and the fact I think it's a guaranteed action fight, and more importantly, we haven't seen it before because as dramatic as the fourth fight with Marquez was, I've done it. It's been a while. I'm good with that being the exclamation to that rivalry. I'd like to see Lucas Matisse, if he should get past a very difficult, awkward Victor Postol coming up on October 3rd. Let's get to some of the tweets here. If you want to tweet in, at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. And, of course, our Ricky Henderson, the president, Andrew V. Kennedy, asks, so if Heyman is ever deposed, will it be free to attend? Also, is Lemieux overconfident or no? He seems ready to go. Gabe, let me just say this right now. If these Heyman PBC depositions are free to go, I will be camping out like one of those guys at the premiere of an Apple iPhone. I will literally be there 5 days early with a sleeping bag, a tent, and all the Cheetos I can eat and some bottled water. I'm getting my seat, man.
You're picking up your air, Heyman. Early. I would come out of retirement for that. If that's open to the public, I have to seriously think about getting a venue and covering that. The guys, you know, the people that looked at all the stuff I did with PEDs and that, oh, that's kind of hard, all that research and all that science. And, you know, I didn't go to college. I think the lesson they have to take from that, and even the Angulo stories, which don't get a lot of run, it's a lot of just doing the job. And I think guys really need to get on their legal game here and really be courtroom reporters, take all this stuff and learn. Information needs to be out there. I'm really curious to see. I've heard from more than a few sources that the way these guys get paid is a little different than how they're actually getting paid. That's what I want to see. I want to see the financials. I think there's a good somewhere out there.
You know, when I'm saying D&D, I don't mean Dungeons & Dragons, which for the record I never played. I'm talking about discovery and depositions. Let the games begin. Here's one from our old friend Joshua Scalabrini, honoring one of the great 12th men in NBA history. For Rodokoff to Showtime, is it done or just in progress depending on his opponents? Josh, I can tell you one thing. I think you could stick a fork in it. It is done. I believe it is going to happen. I think it will be announced very soon. I expect him to be on the network November 7th, perhaps at the Barclays Center, against a soon-to-be-named opponent. Here's one from Boxing Reality. Any news on the Heyman lawsuits from Golden Boy or Top Rank? And as predicted, Floyd seems to have gotten a pass on his IV scandal. Gabe, to that second point, do you agree with that?
I think guys are following up. And I think it's a dense piece of work that needs to be broken down. People went the initial scan, and you just look at the IV thing. But the real story there is that low TE ratio. What was going on there? And can we get the rest of the results, all the other fights? That was a great get by Tom Hauser. I think that's the story. And when you really look at the cover story that's been put out by USADA, and, you know, the way the NSAC has put a stamp of approval on it, it just doesn't make sense when you look. You know that he weighed in at 150, 30 days out from the fight. What did he do that made him so dehydrated that he needed 750 milliliters? It was a great piece. I think it was Hauser. One of his responses was breaking down Jeff Nowitzki, who now is the drug czar for the UFC, and the guy that, you know, was almost caught Armstrong, and really was the guy that amassed all that evidence that USADA came in and kind of put their foot on and said, we did this. Extensively talks about the use of IV being, number one, a masking agent for drugs. He said that's generally what it's for. So that's the top guy in the land saying that, or, you know, ex-top cop in the land saying that. There's just so much more there. I mean, have they gotten a pass? I don't know. Has everybody done writing? Has anybody gotten Floyd cornered that isn't fight hype and asked him? It's not over till it's over.
I'm just going to say this. I don't think the story is over. This is not a one-episode deal. I think this is more roots. In other words, there are more chapters coming. I believe that certain people are not done with the story.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. Here's one from Loon Leo. Will Amir Khan ever stop acting like a pay-per-view star and just fight Brooke already? Gabe, I've said this before. In lieu of a matchup with Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather, Amir Khan, what excuse does he have to not fight Kell Brook in a reasonable amount of time? Again, I get it. If you're any fighter and you're in the Pacquiao or Mayweather sweepstakes, you take that fight. No argument. But if that option is not there and Kell Brook sells some tickets, has a major belt, a respected fighter, undefeated, I'm sorry. The jig is up.
Well, I think, you know, I was looking at your list for Pacquiao, the list of names he wants to face, and I'm wondering, like, you know, what is the most winnable fight for Manny Pacquiao on that list? And also, what, you know, winnable while still gaining him respect. And I think Amir Khan is that guy. So I think Khan, his list needs to be as good as Pacquiao's. It needs to be reasonable. There's no excuse not to fight Kell Brook. He's your contemporary. If you can't get Manny Pacquiao, then you got to fight Kell Brook. I mean, because both those guys need respect. They need not just a win, but they need respect. And I think through each other is the way to go, personally.
And finally, here's one from Jamal. Pac versus Matisse would be bombs away if Pacquiao would score a KO. Would people claim he's picking smaller opponents? Gabe, in my opinion, no, because let's face it. Isn't Manny Pacquiao, for all intents and purposes, basically a junior welterweight?
Yeah, and he actually weighs in on the night of the fight, so he's not just saying that. You know, he actually is smaller. I mean, having seen both guys, Floyd looks like he's grown into middleweight on fight night, whereas Pacquiao still looks like, you know, in the mid-range, you know, like junior middleweight. He's not a huge guy. No, I don't think he's – Matisse is not the biggest guy in the world either. I think it's a nice matchup. It's almost akin to how I think Valero and Manny Pacquiao would have matched up.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We're here till at least 8:30 Eastern time, and I'll be honest, with the Colts playing the Jets, shorter show would not be the worst thing. Hey, as they say, we don't get paid for overtime here. Gabe, let's get to the phone lines.
Let me ask you, what do you think is the best fight for Pacquiao on that list?
Stylistically, I would say Lucas Matisse, because Lucas Matisse, I'm not saying he's hittable, I'm not saying he's one-dimensional, but he's the easiest guy to find. I mean, just look at this. Amir Khan, quick feet, can scamper away. Terrence Crawford can certainly do that, a lot of athleticism, and he's tall and lean. Juan Manuel Marquez, putting aside the ring rust that might exist, he's always troubled Manny Pacquiao with his counter-punching style. And Cal Brook is a big, strong welterweight. I think Matisse, the tangibles that he brings, best fit what Manny Pacquiao may want to face a fight right now. I also think stylistically they make the best two-way action. So I would go with the Machine.
And I kind of like that it would bring back the Golden Boy Top Rank rivalry. I think it's great in the sport when you have two promoters going at it the way those two guys are. Let's hit the phone lines in the 530. You're live on the next round. 530.
Not a good start here. Okay.
Yeah,
see you later.
Coming right out the gate like the hawk. 619, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Juan from San Diego.
Juan, welcome aboard. How you doing?
Very good, guys. How you doing? Last week, I wanted to get a little bit on the, you know, the Mayweather thing, but we went to another direction. I couldn't get to that. But, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I've been reading your stuff, Gabriel. I saw you before, ever since you started talking about the PEDs, and I've educated myself throughout those years thanks to you. I've seen all the videos from Victor Conte, and I think that whoever starts talking about this without seeing any of that can't give an opinion on it. To me, it's very clear. The two things that came out of that article, the IV and the TE ratio, those two things are very simple to analyze. You don't have to be an expert. Those two things are, the IVs are banned just because, and it's easy. People use it for a single purpose in sports. In sports, and that's to mask another thing, you know? It's easy. That's the only reason why they banned it, you know? Because people were using it to cheat, using it to not get caught. WADA got and looked at those things and said, hey, stop it. We know what you're doing. Now it's banned. Now you can't do it. The same thing, if I'm not mistaken, was that clenbuterol, the one that Eric Morales got caught on? I think that was that does the same thing, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Gabriel?
I don't know about it being a masking agent. There's clenbuterol is kind of controversial because there was a case that where athletes in Mexico were exonerated because the meat was apparently contaminated with clenbuterol. But then again, you look at where clenbuterol shows up, like if you look at the doping reports from WADA, like, you know, globally, clenbuterol shows up all over the place. So everybody's eating Mexican meat or everybody's using clenbuterol, you know?
Exactly. And that's exactly my point. Whenever you start seeing those things come up with athletes specifically, that's when you start to ask questions. So that's the first thing. The TE ratio, again, as you said it and as Hauser said it, when you see those numbers, there have to be questions asked. And especially a guy that's 38 years old, that has the reflexes of a 25-year-old, looks ripped. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but having that body and having a 0.069 ratio, does that – doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm 38. And I think when I've been working out for the last 12 years, and it takes me way more time to get fit than it did 5 years ago, let alone 10 years ago. So looking at that guy and comparing him to other 38 years olds, and I mean athletes, and then looking at those numbers, man, you don't have to be a scientist. You know, to me, whoever's asking questions and just, you know, saying, I don't know, maybe he was dehydrated. That whoever's saying that has a hidden agenda. To me, it's simple. He's hiding something. You know, it's there. Somebody needs to dig it up. And
it's funny to me. Floyd's statement. He talked about, you know, I've been taking the gold standard of testing, and I remember at the press conference for Ortiz, I asked him actually. I think Doug Fisher was standing there. Will you be doing the you know 365? Like it was after Donaire had begun his. Are you going to go, you know, year round, like which is considered the gold standard of testing? And Floyd's response was, "Hey, if they got a platinum standard for testing, I'll do that." So now he's met the gold standard.
Yeah, okay.
The second thing I wanted to say, and then this real quick, another thing, I was thinking about the PVC, and, you know, I've been watching, and sometimes I don't watch, you know, and it reminded me, you know, it reminded me of the WWF back in the 80s. You know, you got those Saturday shows. I was a kid. I watched it. I became a boxing fan because I learned that the WWF was fake. So I wanted to see
fighting.
So that's why I became a fan. Yeah, I was young. I was 8, 7 years old, and I did watch Roddy Piper, you know, Brutus Barber, Beefcake, all the guys. Shoot Me Super Fight Smoke, and all those guys.
S.D. Jones,
you know,
Junkyard Dog, Greg the Hammer, Valentine, the British Bulldogs,
everybody.
Rocky Johnson. Yeah, but you know what? I never watched. Yeah.
The thing is that PVC reminds you of the WWF, those Saturday shows. Remember they used to fight nobodies all the time? And everybody
was
watching.
Yeah, like Iron Mike Sharp.
Yeah, and
the Brooklyn Brawler.
I always remember I would watch the Saturday shows, and they always fought those nobodies, and they always won. And then if you wanted to see real fights, you had to pay for it for WrestleMania. So the PVC is the exact same thing. They're following successful business models. You know, you
can't. But Juan, here's the difference with those Saturday afternoon shows, which I watched all throughout the 80s. At least they gave you Piper's Pit. They don't even give us that on the PVC.
And Dr. Love. And they gave us, and they actually gave us the 1-2-3 kid beating one of the main attractions.
What?
That's all I got, guys.
All right,
Juan, as always, thank you for the call. If you want to call in, we're going to be here for at least another hour, 347-215-7598. Gabriel Montoya, Steve Kim here on the next round.
You know, I was actually talking to a boxing fan that I know out here who's like a top financial guy. I won't say which company he works for, but they're major league, and his wife's like a vice president there as well, and so they know their money. And I was asking him, because he's deep. I mean, this guy and his buddy Steve have been to kind of like the guys that used to write into you that followed Marquez everywhere. They were like this for Tommy Hearns, and the guy, one of them, Steve, who's no longer with us, had two pictures in his wallet: a picture of his wife and a picture of Tommy Hearns. That's how much they love Tommy.
And,
pretty funny story of them running into him after De La Hoya Vargas and for the meeting him for the first time after watching him fight and showing him the picture, and Tommy was pretty stoked wearing a purple suit with purple shoes. But I was asking about the PBC because I wanted his financial opinion on it, and he said looking at a company like Waddell and Reed, which are very very good at what they do is, he said, what these guys do, this is being paid for from monies made by other things the company is doing. So they'll go through 2016 like they plan, and they'll assess at that point. And so the reason I bring that up is whenever you post or I post the Waddell and Reed articles, I'll see guys come up and say, well, that's not connected to the PBC. That's not a related story, you know, if their stocks are down or, you know, people are leaving the company. But to me, it's very much about the PBC because that's the side money project. That's the first thing that gets cut when everything else is falling apart. So this guy seemed to think that Waddell and Reed was pretty smart. I trust his opinion, but it's interesting when you look at it from that whole large perspective.
Hmm. It's amazing. Everyone's an expert on Twitter. That's all I could say. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
CT, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you doing tonight?
Good. What's going on, CT?
I was going to ask you guys, how realistic is the Thurman and Porter fight to possibly happen?
Gabe, according to Kenny Porter, I don't know if you've talked to him recently, he said none. He really thinks that they're going to fight sometime in November, but he's made it clear to me, and I don't know if things have changed since the last time I talked to him, but as it relates to a specific fight with one time, I do not believe that will happen in the year 2015.
It's just so strange, all the weird chatter is saying that it's almost a done deal, you know, anymore. I wish people would go with two or three sources before they say things like that. But, you know, I haven't talked to Kenny, so I'll just trust your word on it.
Right. And, you know, maybe things have changed. Let's face it. The PBC is not exactly feeding me scoops here. But all I could tell you is the last time I spoke to Mr. Porter, he was of the belief, now unless he's lying to me, that fight is not happening next.
CT.
Okay. One more question. I think Demetrius Andrade, he had to give up his title, right? I think that's what I read. Is Jermell Charlo going to fight for that title next, or are they going to have, like...
I really don't know. I mean, Demetrius Andrade mismanaged his own career to a point where he's fighting, I believe, on what, October 17th on this non-televised show at the Mohegan Sun.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to go on. And as for the WBO, I'll be honest with you. Haven't cared enough to ask.
Alvarez is in position for that, although he's going for the middleweight title in terms of just the rankings. So you got Michael Soro, Liam Smith, Austin Trout are next in line, John Thompson. Rounding out the top five. So, you know, it's hard to say what's going to happen with that belt. It was kind of weird, though. Remember when that belt didn't matter? Now it matters. Does it matter?
Yeah.
I got one other question. I was reading on social media today. I wasn't sure, so I wanted to get you guys' take on this. I always wondered why Tyson ever fought Tim Witherspoon, but I also read back then that Don King didn't allow that to happen for one way or another. Do you guys know any input on that?
I'll be honest. I have never heard that specifically Don King did not allow that to happen. Here's what I do know, though. Tim Witherspoon, if you go back in history, I believe in 85 or 86, was one of the few fighters to successfully sue Don King. And my belief is based on that. He may have been blacklisted from being in the Mike Tyson sweepstakes.
No,
okay,
that's probably it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, CT, thank you for the call. If you want to join us, 347-215-7598. In a few minutes, we'll go through some news and notes, and later on, the fight preview. Gabe?
I don't know who I have in that fight. If Spoon is in great shape, you know, which sometimes he was, sometimes he wasn't, but it's always dangerous. I would like to see that fight. 323, you're live on the next round.
Gentlemen.
Fight on.
Thanks. Fight on. Steve, I have to preface, our season's over. I'm hopping back in the Kings wagon.
Oh, wait, over? Wait a minute, hold on. You're three games into the year. You're 2-1, and the season is over?
When Stanford comes to our house and humiliates us like that, and now Steven Espinosa has that over me, it's done. As long as we beat UCLA, that's fine. Anything else, any championship aspirations, they're done now. I'm over it.
Fran, can I just say something? Any team that allows itself to get run up and down the field like a bunch of pylons by Kevin Hogan, yeah. Who am I fooling? Your season's over.
Thank you, Steve. It was atrocious. I left by the third quarter. I'm like, jeez. I'm over this. You know, I was upset.
And guys, I thought Miami fans were upset after that victory on Saturday. Jeez, harsh crowd there at the Coliseum. So, Sanj, what's going on?
I'm just wondering, you know, it's been a great week in boxing outside the ring. You know, I'm excited that Burt Fields gave Heyman his first knockdown, standing 8 count. You know, it's going to be interesting to see Mr. Albert Heyman in a room with a bunch of other Harvard lawyers, with DiBella, Bob Arum, Burt Fields. That's spectacle, Steve. I would camp out right there with you just to. This is reminiscent of the OJ trial. Seriously, it's exciting.
I talked to somebody.
Can I just say something? Go ahead, Gabe.
Oh, I was just talking to somebody that was about a month ago that's connected deep in that camp, in the Heyman camp, and his response when the lawsuits first went down was, "I thought they would have done it sooner." That was the only hint of surprise or anything. The guy said he's not sweating the lawsuits one iota. No pun intended.
Okay.
My thing is, if he wasn't sweating them, then he wouldn't. Obviously, he is now, because it's not been moved to arbitration. So now it's what are these sham promoters going to say when they get called to the stand? You know, are they sham promoters or are they not promoters? So I got my popcorn ready. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to
this.
I'm
curious to see if they try to move venues, if they try to move out of a certain area, or if they're comfortable. As it's been explained to me, like, the goal, you know, in lawsuits is that what they call, like, to be in the right pond, you know, to know the right lawyers, right judges, all that, have all that dialed. I'm curious if that'll be the next move.
Well, again, the research I've done on Burr, that's why I think Golden Boy filed the case in California, because Mr. Fields' reputation in this area is very well respected, and there's a couple of Hollywood Reporter articles that I read on him. He's had Hollywood executives quaking in their boots before court, so it's going to be exciting, is all I'm saying. I'm looking forward to it, and I just love
better than Wilder and Wampus.
Isn't that fight? I thought that fight was sold out, Steve. Isn't that fight sold out, or is there a church discount for that one too?
You know, whatever the PBC puts out in terms of their propaganda, and yes, I did use the P word, I don't believe a single ounce of it. I really don't. If it was selling that well, you wouldn't be doing ticket discounts and using this as some sort of de facto fundraiser for UAB Blazer football. Sanj, my question to you is this. On Saturday night around 5:30, are you going to be watching NBC?
Yes, Steve, because my date is not till the week after. And I'm excited to see, because Wilder shows vulnerability. So I'm just curious. It's a heavyweight scrap, so I'll give it a chance for the first few rounds. But I'm waiting for October 3rd at StubHub, and then Triple G, and then Canelo, when some real fights going on, and some really money-making fights that
Brazil,
the boxing community is clamoring
Cassie.
For.
Brazil versus Cassie might actually have some action to it, because I think Brazil is really open for shots. I think a knockout waiting to happen.
I don't disagree.
So I think it'll be the card has potential to be entertaining. I mean, you know me, Steve, I like to shit on PBC just like the next guy. But if it's entertaining, I'm not gonna knock entertainment if it's one each fight they're going to give the crowd what they want to see and impose their will. My thing is, you know what I'm waiting for, Steve? I'm waiting for that email that Andre Ward supposedly sent out to make sure the dates coincide with what he's saying and what Tom's saying. I'm still, you know, waiting for that to be produced. Maybe we have to get a deposition for that.
Speaking of which, guys, I found that to be just head-scratching how Andre Ward, first of all, can say, well, we made him a 50-50 deal, as if somehow Andre Ward is worthy of purse parity right now in terms of market value with Gennady Golovkin. And then for him to dictate any terms beyond that, I'll say it again, he is the most delusional pound-for-pound human being on the planet. I don't even think it's close.
Yeah, I just find it funny. He's the only one speaking from his – I don't hear Roc Nation saying nothing. I don't hear his management saying nothing. So he's the only one adding to this. And now Kovalev came out today saying, well, the offer's there for him if he wants a big pay-per-view fight. And he's quiet again. I mean, is he fasting? Is he abiding by the commandments today? Or I don't know what's going on, you know? That's what I really wanted to ask you. What's Kovalev's next move? Because it seems like everybody on HBO, like, they're – their marquee guys are lined up for fights. Any word on what went Kovalev?
Kathy says she's working on a deal. She cannot divulge it. I think as of right now, late November in Russia with HBO televising, I think is in pencil, not in ink. Going back to Ward real fast, guys, what I was told last week is that for Ward to appear on the November 21st undercard of Cotto Canelo, that what's being negotiated is HBO paying a part of that purse to get Ward on there as part of a larger multi-fight deal with some sort of commitment to fight Kovalev. So, I don't know if that comes to fruition. I don't know how real that is. But that's the latest in the saga of as the Ward turns.
And I would assume, Steve, that Kovalev fight would have to happen in the second fight. Okay, we'll give you one gimme at 175, and then bam, first quarter of 2016 or summer of 2016.
Yeah, you know, I actually spoke to Kathy on the record about this about 2 months ago, and she said back then they were talking to Roc Nation, and they believe the plan would be somewhere into the early summer, early fall region of 2016 for that potential matchup.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so it seems like he doesn't want to be a fighting champion. He wants that two fight a year, and then exactly. So it's just funny, you know, they try to pull the wool over aficionados' eyes that can actually critically think and don't have to watch a website, see interviews, and actually read Thomas Hauser's 16 pages. You know, I guess War is just starting to play to his demographic. I mean, all 45 of them, you know.
Yeah, it's. I'll tell you one thing. If you have a deficit of critical thinking, he's right up your alley. It's really that simple. Sancho, we got to get running, okay?
Who's your picks this week, Steve? College football. What you got?
You know, honestly, I haven't even really looked at the schedule yet. I'm still kind of exhausted from the heat stroke I nearly got at the new and improved Sun Life Stadium, which still does not have a canopy.
At least you got to see your team win, Steve. That's all I can say.
Yes, well, that is the good news. So, all right. Listen, Sanch, we got to get running, okay?
All right, gentlemen. Have a great evening.
347-215-7598. In a few minutes, we'll go through some news and notes. Gabe?
I have a question. If Triple G is now Little G, according to Andre Ward, if Andre Ward ends
clever.
Up on that...
Ooh, that's clever.
It really is. If he ends up on that undercard, does that make him son of Cotto Canelo?
Ooh, whoa, Gabe. You went there.
I did. 530, you're live on the next round. We tried you before.
Hey, how you doing? This is Rich from NorCal.
Rich, what's going on?
Not so much, guys. Sorry about leaving you guys hanging that first call of the show and giving you a knockdown, man. I was driving right through a bad reception area. But
as the commercial says, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now, definitely.
Good! Okay.
So my first question is about the sanctioned organizations, WBC, WBA, WBO, and IBF. Do they have any recourse against the PBC once they bring out those belts, or legal or otherwise? And will the sanctioned organizations just go along with it because it'd be too much money that they're not getting in sanctions?
I don't think they do. I really don't. It's not as if the sanctioning bodies are this pristine organization, Gabe. To me, it'll just provide a further divide within the sport. But, no, I really don't think they have any legal recourse.
No, I don't. I mean, nobody's ever answered the question thoroughly for me. What is a sanctioning body for? I mean, they have certain guidelines and regulations, but they don't have any control over the commission in each of the 50 states. So they're kind of almost like a USADA, you know, where they can do their own stuff, make their own decisions, but ultimately have no power unless you give it to them. I still don't understand how it all works, but, like, look at the Mayweather situation, where they haven't stripped him of his belts, even though he's quote unquote retired. They're going to make a decision at their later in the year at a convention, and then they'll decide whether or not to give him an extension, and wait for that fat sanctioning fee when he comes back around. So it's just a weird system.
So real quickly then, do you guys see this as the bad before the good, the calm before, you know, that whole bad area before it gets better? As it relates to this, are we headed towards the National Boxing Commission? Is that going to happen?
No. I don't think there'll ever be one. And I think Teddy Atlas's dream will have died at that point. You know, I just don't know. Here's the other issue. What makes people think a national boxing commission would be the panacea? I just think this game is so fractured that those involved will never endorse it. They'll never get behind it. And quite frankly, we don't need a national commission. That's just my particular opinion. Like, people like to pound their chest and believe that they're the ones that could clean up boxing. You know, I don't know. The powers that be need to run the sport a little bit better, but I don't see one natural national central commission being this end-all and be-all.
No, I mean, you have the Association of Boxing Commissions. I mean, if anything, maybe they could be more empowered so that they could settle on a set of, you know, standards that everybody would follow. But then that still becomes a political position. People, you know, Nevada considers themselves the head of the ABC. Keith Kaiser certainly did, from what I understood, and would kind of snub ABC meetings because of it. It's all very political. All those positions are politically appointed. So, yeah, I agree with you, Steve. I don't necessarily think a national commission is it. But I'll say this. If this USADA thing doesn't go away, and let's say somebody investigates it, you know, a law enforcement level, anything's possible, and there would be big change.
Anything else, Rich?
Yeah. One last thing. I remember you wrote the story on the venue squatting, Steve, and I know that you were mentioned in the top ranked lawsuit. His penis for this.
Me? Wow, little old me? Subpoenaed? Huh. Well, I'd clear my calendar, certainly, because I just want justice and truth and honesty and integrity to win out. That's all I'm all about.
And free boxing for all.
Yes, and free boxing for all. I'd be subpoenaed. I don't know what I have to do with anything. As they say, I just work here.
Guy in the know. Hey, guys, thanks for the talk.
All right.
That's great.
Gabe, let's go through some news and notes here before we return to the phone lines. And again, we're going to be here till at least 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Jermaine Taylor, I just read this on Twitter and online, got released from jail, got bailed out, and this is a thing that's groan-inducing. He's heading straight to training camp. Gabe, isn't that great?
Wow. Who's training him? Oliver McCall?
Jeez.
I mean, you know, boxing, then it's like, yeah, we kind of need a national commission, you know, that we need like more regulation, more enforcement. I mean, this guy, Mike Shepard, that's fighting on this, you know, he's a banner. I don't even know who his promoter is, but it's, you know, somebody's offering this guy up. He's 40 years old. You know, he's got 18 losses, 13 of them are by KO. You know, he got knocked out by Gerald Washington back in 2014. He's fought twice since. And here he is on a PBC card against a 30-1 guy. You know, we do need something better than what we've got going on. You know, or we're going to have another death. You know, and I think they're avoidable, but it is what it is.
The problem that I have with Jermaine Taylor in relationship to other comebacks, and other comebacks aren't necessarily great. I think they're bad ideas too. Like Antonio Margarito. I wrote a brief for Boxing Scene where Top Rank says if he's medically cleared, we don't have a problem, but he has to be medically cleared. Number one, Margarito is an eye, and an eye is very important, but it's not neurological. Number two, Antonio Margarito has not shown signs of mental illness or what the football players go through with the CTE, where you just get the sense, and there's actual evidence, they're brain damaged. That's the big issue. I really wonder who is going to, number one, license Jermaine Taylor, and number two, after everything he's been through post-Sam Solomon, where certain people were celebrating like they were vindicated, Gabe, who would dare promote him?
Yeah, I don't – it would be a travesty if they put him on, but, you know, PBC put on Razor Ruddock, so I don't. You got all those dates. You got to get some Hamburger Helper in there. Jermaine Taylor is certainly that at this point.
Yeah, I'll take a look at the fight preview here tomorrow night on FS1. Julian Williams takes on Luciano Cuello, and on Unamas, Andy Ruiz takes on Devin Vargas, and on BN Espanol, Juan Francisco Estrada takes on Hernan Tyson Marquez. Gabe, Julian Williams, if there is a definition of well-rounded prospect, a guy that I think is built to last fundamentally and technically, it is Julian Williams, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, dude. I really like this kid. He works so hard. He's always in shape every time I see him. He's always in better shape. And with the trip, you know, they're all about the numbers, all the guys that they train over at Undisputed. He comes in for like two mini camps. I think this is maybe his third or fourth time doing it. They take down a log of all his numbers, you know, all his times on all the sprints and his blood, you know, oxygen levels and all that stuff. And he's a guy they keep saying they can't find his ceiling. They can't tire him out. He's just workmanlike, brutally punishing, built old school. But this is a tough fight. Luciano Cueto is a tough guy. He's going to take you rounds. He went in tough with Willie Nelson. That's a tough, close fight. Saul Alvarez, you know, got him out of there, which speaks to Alvarez's quality. But even the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight, that's another tough, close fight. This guy comes to win. And I expect this to go rounds. You know, if Williams is able to stop him, that would be very impressive.
The word I would use to describe Mr. Cuello is sturdy. That's exactly what he is. He is built tough. He's like a fire hydrant. He's solid. He's tough. Hard to move. Also, Andy Ruiz against Devin Vargas. Gabe, I'm interested to see the new downsized version of Andy Ruiz, who over the summer spent some time in Big Bear with Abel Sanchez and literally dropped about 35, 40 pounds. I think in this particular instance, as it relates to Andy Ruiz, I think less will be more.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he doesn't work hard. He just doesn't look like he works hard. You know, there's another level, you know. I expect him to beat Devin Vargas. I mean, he's fresh off a TKO loss, last June to Dominic Brazil. So, you know, fresh, meaning he's been just sitting around waiting for his next opportunity to lose. He's a rangy, tall guy, but, I just don't expect him to go very long. He's been on a bad streak as of late, actually, having been stopped four times out of his last five outings. So Ruiz should look good. If he's in good shape, then he should just not.
347-215-7598. Steve Kim, Gabriel Montoya on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. We could be here for another 38 minutes or longer, depending on your participation. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
347, you're live on the next round. Mike from Queens. I think Mike's on mute.
He's out of here.
All right. 323, you're live on the next round.
Hello, yes?
3-2. Hey, what's up?
Yes, who is this?
Hello, this is Dave from Los Angeles.
Dave, welcome aboard.
Thank you. My question was, how is it that these PvP people, you know, supporting PvP, keep it going when they're seeing the ratings dwindle, you know, and they're going down at a rate that it's a little... It just reminds me of a show that, you know, gets axed, like, more sooner than later.
No, but don't you know that's part of the plan? Haven't you heard? Isn't that the newest thing, Gabe, their newest rationale? That's part of the plan, the growing pains. Okay.
Yeah, I don't... everybody's a financial planner all of a sudden. I mean, the guy I was citing is, you know, actually, like, that's what he does. He's in the financial industry. He knows, you know, he could just speak offhand about the thing. Everybody else, don't tell me that, you know, it's part of the plan to lose over $200 million going on three, overpaying people left and right, like kind of what I've heard under the table off to the side. I don't know. I don't know what, if that's part of the plan, like, I don't get the plan.
Anything else, Dave?
Oh, yeah, and my other question is, because I'm not very knowledgeable when it comes to weight when it's at the 30-day mark. Can you give me a little explanation on with Golovkin being at 165 and then Lemieux being 15 pounds over the 160 limit, you know, with 1 month away?
Gabe, from what I understand, and I don't really keep track of this as well as I should perhaps, but I guess Lemieux is one of these guys that just carries a lot of weight and then probably declines in weight precipitously closer to the fight? Because my understanding is for the Endam fight, he was right around the same range.
Yeah, he's a big guy that you know, he's not the tallest guy in the world, but he's just got a wide frame and he just packs on a lot of weight. So that's going to be interesting on fight night. You know, who weighs more? Because Triple G doesn't put on a whole hell of a lot of weight after weigh-in. So, you know, if Lemieux is back up in the 70s, you know, man, his punch is going to be felt.
Yeah, and by the way, to go back to the president's tweet, do I think Lemieux is overconfident? You know what? From a fan's perspective, against Golovkin, I'd much rather see a guy who's overconfident than Bruce Seldon against Mike Tyson. Give me a guy willing to go out on a shield that'll say, you know what, I'm here to knock you flat.
Yeah. Especially a guy that's lost a couple times, you know, that had a really rough time. Like he was, you know, he was the guy. They were building him to be a star, and then he loses. And he's built himself back to a title holder. Confidence is a big part of the game. I love Lemieux's attitude. It shows that he's gotten over those losses and learned from them.
Thank you. That was all.
All right, man.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to our next caller. That number, if you want to jump in, 347-215-7598.
510, you're live on the next round. 510.
Or not.
All right, or not. I want to jump back to Mike in Queens just to see. Mike, are you there?
What's up, guys?
How you doing? Mike,
what's up, man?
Welcome aboard.
I was just listening to the show, and I think it said about boxing that I don't know what to even ask you guys about. It's such a like boring time
brutal
of the year.
Summer.
You know what I mean? It's really
Mike.
Brutal.
Okay, hold on. Let's turn the tables. Are you going to be watching tomorrow night's PBC? And what about Wilder Duopas?
I'm going to be honest with you. I follow boxing a lot. I have no idea who Duopas is. So hopefully
join
he's a good fighter. Yeah, I know nothing about him, so usually that's not a good thing. So the PBC, I like watching Julian Williams. I want to see him fight real guys now. And it's tomorrow, like, is that his first real fight? You know what I mean? Because it seems like he's been in the prospect stage for a little too long now, you know?
Let me just say this as it relates to Julian Williams. I believe there are certain or a lot of PBC guys, Austin Trout, that are hiding behind Al Haymon. I don't believe Julian Williams is one of them. If you gave Julian Williams a legitimate offer to fight one of the quote-unquote marquee names or established fighters at 154, I firmly believe him and the bread man, Steven Edwards, they'd raise their hands and they'd give us a pen, put our name on the dotted line. It takes two to tango. And I know there are specific names that have absolutely treated him like the HIV virus. They want no part of Julian Williams. Julian is one of those guys, Gabe, where I say, you know what? You get a pass because I know you're trying to do your part.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, he's, you know, you look at what the PBC is trying to do. Is they're trying to build their guys over a lot of dates. And so they're hiring, you know, basically the boxing equivalent of the guys on Star Trek with the red shirt that goes down there and you know they're going to die. That's all the opponents on the PBC. So Julian, I think, is going to be used for dates more than, you know, this is a tough fight, but I don't expect them to be handing him over to the big names anytime soon.
Yeah, but is Austin Trout really a big name?
But he's established. He is established.
Yeah.
He has good, solid victories. He's been on a big stage.
That's true.
And for Julian Williams, that's a great scalp to have. Now,
yeah.
I do understand from Austin Trout saying, well, wait a minute, I fought Cotto and Canelo. Who are you? But again, Austin, last I checked, you're not selling out 10,000 seats, okay? Stop acting like you're Miguel Cotto. You're not, as Miguel would say, Asai.
Yeah. I got me thinking about the PBC, like, if they're not willing to, like, build draws, like a draw like Golden Boy is with Canelo or Top Rank is with the kid from Puerto Rico, wouldn't you like to see them sign more fighters like a Rigondeaux where it doesn't matter? Like, because if I'm able to watch, like, Charlo Brothers fights and Ishae Smith fights, wouldn't you rather watch Rigondeaux? Like, why would you put Ishae Smith more on
television
than Rigondeaux?
But, Mike, you are making the assumption that every single guy in the PBC would then say, yes, I'll fight Rigondeaux and get blanked for 12 rounds. Again, it still takes two to tango.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just saying that if it's free, and I understand it, I'm not the biggest PBC fan, but I'm like, okay, I'm seeing a lot of Ishe Smith, a lot of Mickey Bay. I could deal with some Rigondeaux for free. You know what I mean? I'd rather that than some stream or some YouTube video 2 weeks after, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know what
– We'll see. He's a free agent, right? So he's out there. Let's see if Al really does want everybody under the sun that isn't signed. I think if they get him, they're going to make him fight big, though. They're gonna put him at a disadvantage. There's no way they're gonna help Rigondeaux out.
Yeah, but I'd still want to see it. I'd still rather see that than another Ishe Smith fight. Call me crazy.
No, I would agree with you on that. Yeah. Mike, we got to get running. Okay, as always. Thank you for the call.
All right, guys, have a good one.
By the way, speaking of not making fights, I like Eddie Hearn. I've met him a few times. I respect what he does. I didn't want to believe it, and some of my UK followers on Twitter, like Brian King and Chad McFarlane, would say, Steve, do not fall for his nonsense. He does the most amount of shows. He does some of the biggest shows. He has some of the best fighters, but he always does the bait and switch. Like some of his guys like Kell Brook and Scott Quigg, they'll always talk about fighting certain fights. He'll throw the bait out there, then it'll be a bait and switch. We saw it again with Scott Quigg Donaire. I bought in. I believed there was no Santa Claus. I did not get the Red Ryder BB gun. It's very clear to me, Eddie Hearn, he's more about teasing than pleasing. It is what it is, and it's disappointing, Gabe.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I mean, if we can get – and I, you know, it's hard for me to even hope for this, but I'd rather see Quigg Frampton right now than Quigg Donaire. That's the fight – that we were building towards. That's the fight that I think should happen.
Right, but Gabe, I don't disagree, but here's the problem with that. That's become the miniature UK version of Pacquiao Mayweather.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, are you sure we're going to see it next year? It seems to me it's basically a pissing contest between those two sides.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's frustrating. But, you know, and Donaire needs this. I mean, I think right now, you know, particularly he's working often and he seems to slowly be rebuilding himself. This would have been a perfect fight for him and a winnable fight. So it is a bummer, you know, but it's boxing.
347-215-7598 if you want to call in. We still have open phone lines and about 28 minutes left. Gabe, who's next?
209, you're live on the next round. 209.
Hi. I think this is me.
Yes.
It is you.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks. First time caller. I've actually listened to your show a few of the replays. Not too long. So, coming from a novice point of view, I guess dipping into a hardcore boxing fan, I wouldn't fully say that though. But I want to say your show is great, and I really appreciate all the work that you guys do to inform dumb guys like me. with that said, I had a question in regards to De La Hoya and Golden Boy. I was reading on BoxingScene.com, and there's this one poster that seems pretty knowledgeable. He posted something that stated that Oscar's basically getting peanuts for, like, the DC and Canelo when he puts them on HBO, and that HBO basically forced him to put Lemieux in with Triple G.
No, I don't believe that. Here's the thing where I give Oscar credit. Oscar's mantra for most of this year was, I want to make the best versus best. And I always thought Cotto Canelo was such big business, you had to do it. The Lemieux situation to me was going to put him on the microscope. Does he really mean what he says? My understanding is that Lemieux is getting paid very well. I mean, upwards of $2 million. As they said in The Godfather, that was an offer they couldn't refuse.
Okay. Added to which, he thinks he can win, you know. I don't see the problem there. I mean, I think if they were kind of forced into it with that, I mean, they had, you know, Golden Boy had nice leverage with the Cotto fight. you gotta if you want to take the ride, you gotta buy the ticket. And I like what Oscar's doing, and it seems to me that their philosophy has always been to make the most action fights, and even when it was maybe not in their best interest, like Kirkland and Gulo, I guess maybe in retrospect happened at the right time, but those two careers could have been salvaged a little bit, but it was a good fight to make at the right time, so they did it. And it's always been Oscar's MO, I think.
Gabe, let me just point this out, guys, on Oscar's behalf. If you look at 2015, when he took the control back of his company, from Kirkland Canelo to Matisse Provodnikov to Matisse Postal, Humberto Soto against Antonio Orozco, Cotto Canelo, Golovkin Lemieux, I would argue there is no promotional company in the world this year that has been directly involved in more meaningful, entertaining matchups than Golden Boy.
No question. No question. They're all fights of substance, have divisional importance. You know, maybe Kirkland, Canelo, not so much, but it was an action fight featuring two big names, and they'd been kind of heading towards each other for a few years. You know, it was what it was. But, no, Oscar's delivered. And he's promised to work with other promoters, and it seems to be something else that he's doing, you know.
Anything else we can do for you?
No, that's it. I mean, just one note on the TBC, which I'm with you guys. I totally think it's garbage. I only saw the very first one because of curiosity. And I actually ended up seeing my second TBC event just last week on YouTube. It was Khan and Algeri. And only because Algeri hooked up with Jackson, and I want to see what improvements he's made. I thought it was a good fight. I had Khan winning at 7 rounds to 5. And that's about it.
All right. Thank you very much. Please join us again. 347-215-7598. This is the next round with Gable Montoya and Steve Kim.
602, you're live on the next round. 602? Nope.
Mm.
Right. Just a little bit closer to the football game. We'll go to the other 602. You're live on the next round. 602.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey, what's up? This is Brandon from Phoenix. How are you guys doing?
Brandon, up, welcome aboard.
Good, 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 man. Hey, I got a quick question for you. Is there any way we can get rid of the WBA and elevate the IBO to a major championship? Because what the WBA is doing right now to me is just disgusting, with the three belts and Broner getting a title shot off of a loss and all the stuff that goes in with them. Is there any way that's actually possible, Steve?
You know, I don't know, and I agree with you. Listen, I am not a person that believes we need one belt. I just don't believe it's realistic. I'm not one of those crusaders trying to do their own sanctioning body. But the WBA, I think they crossed the line when you're right. When they do multiple belts in a single division. We don't need a super, super-duper, not-so-super-duper. That, to me, is where you start to really, really display bad taste and hubris. But I don't know what the IBO can really do to have credibility, because I think 4 is the threshold. Now, of course, they used to say 3 was the threshold, and you had the WBO. But it is interesting. A guy like Gennady Golovkin, who is certainly one of the most important fighters in the game, they make it a point to not only keep the IBO, but to tell people that they also have the IBO belt. So getting more fighters associated with them, like a Gennady Golovkin, would certainly help their case.
But to follow up on that, what did the WBO do, or when was the point that kind of came over where the WBO was kind of considered major? Because for me, the first time I really remember seeing the WBO was when Hamed was big. And that's the first time I kind of remember it getting respect. But prior to that, was that kind of the first time, or was there somebody else that kind of really brought it to him?
Well, here's what I remember, and this is a little bit before I got into the business on the media side, but I do remember reading clips and snippets in Ring Magazine where, as they started in the late 80s, they really latched on to a lot of Emanuel Stewart and Kronk fighters. I remember Leonza Barber was a WBO champion. Michael Moore was a WBO champion. In fact, Tommy Hearns had a WBO belt. And I think if there was a particular fight, and it may have been with Hearns, They never really said much about the WBO title. Then after Hearns beat, I think, James Kinchin, a fight where he really struggled, held on for dear life, they said to Tommy after the fight, "Congratulations, you're the new WBO champion." And Tommy said, "I didn't even know I was fighting for this," because he literally didn't. I think where the WBO started to have a rise to prominence is their association with Frank Warren. And at the time, guys like Herbie Hyde and Prince Hamed gave a lot of credibility to that title. In fact, Riddick Bowe, when he burned all his bridges with the American sanctioning bodies, I think he held the WBO title for a quick minute. I do think, and again, going by that example, if an IBO can start to get more Gennady Golovkins on board and displaying their belt, I think that would go a long way. But I specifically remember the WBO becoming more important because they latched on to some very popular European/British boxers.
Okay. And then last thing, Gabe, I don't know if you spoke about this earlier because I kind of came in mid-show, but what did you think about USADA's reply to the Hauser article?
I thought it was kind of selective, and, you know, I liked Hauser's counter to their counter coming back, like, what about the TE ratios? What about releasing all the rest of the results? The medical reason, you know, just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, we talked about it earlier on the show, a guy that weighs in 30 days out from the fight, 3 pounds over the weight limit, and even says, you know, that he always stays around 147. It's never a problem for him to make the weight, you know, right after the weigh-in. What happened between that time and all of a sudden he's so dehydrated they needed to call a paramedic and get him an IV? The story just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, I'd be curious to see, you know, if somebody, I don't know if you could, how you could do this, but I'm sure Mayweather videotapes the comings and goings of his place. I'd be curious to see if that time period exists on his compound. You know, when the paramedics bring in the IVs, or if they were already at his house, if that story is true. I'm just not buying it. So But I think the TE ratio, all that, if you're digging into Hauser's piece, that to me just speaks volumes. You know, somebody was saying today on Doghouse Boxing Forum, you know, if Floyd wanted to clean up the sport, maybe he should have started with his own gym, with all those positives that happened in his gym. And then you rattle off the guys that he's connected to, and they're, you know, that may or may not at any given time be in that gym. And you just kind of go, how come that guy's surrounded by drug people? I don't know. You know, that's kind of my take on it. I know why, but I hope more people and more writers wonder why.
Anything else we can do for you?
Yeah, that's about it. That sums it up, man. Hey, Steve, I'll see you at the PBC card here in Glendale, Arizona.
You know what?
When I spot you, it's a round on you, right?
You know what? Not only around, I will buy you filet mignon and lobster. Surf and turf on the Kempster. Absolutely. That day. And that day only.
All right, man. Y'all stay up, man. Peace.
All right. Thank you very much. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
We got two more. It's almost football time. 714.
Yeah.
You're live on the next round. 714. 714, going once? Guess not. All right, and 707. You're our last caller on the next round. Oh, actually, no, we got one more. 707? Nothing. Oh, there's an 805.
Nothing, wow.
Yeah, it's brutal. I believe it's probably not.
A lot of apathy out there. A lot of apathy.
A lot of people realizing the game's on. 805, you're live on the next round. 805?
You know what this is, Gabe? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yes!
Hey.
Please, talk to us.
Hey,
we're drowning.
Hey. What's up, guys? It's me, Nacho.
Oh, Nacho.
Up,
welcome aboard.
Hey.
What's going on?
Yeah. Nothing much. Just to get it out of the way really quick. Steve, how badly were you sweating bullets on Saturday night?
You know what's funny? Throughout that game, I was sweating because it was like 90 degrees with the South Florida humidity, but at least it didn't rain like crazy like it did the day before. Now, I'll say this. Halfway through the fourth, Miami was up 33-10, and Tommy Armstrong is a good quarterback, but he's not Michael Vick or Cam Newton, I said, oh, this is going to be good. I get to relax a little bit. Good to see Brad Kaya be Brad Kaya, Yerby, Walton, Rashawn Scott looking good. And all of a sudden it got to 33-25, and I said, this cannot happen. And they actually scored on the side where I was sitting, and I had a very good seat in the lower bowl. And it was surreal to see what was happening and the Nebraska fans celebrating. And then as Tommy Armstrong threw that unfortunate pick in overtime as Miami somehow escaped, I'm not going to lie to you, Nacho, it was surreal. It felt like a loss, and I've never heard the vitriol aimed at a coach, in this case Al Golden, in a victory. It was a very strange situation to have everyone in boxing tweeting at me asking if I was still alive. But here I am doing the next round. It's all for you guys, for the fans.
Oh,
always
okay.
For the fans.
Glad
yes.
to see you made it out of Miami.
Thank God for Brad Kaya.
Yeah, exactly. The first thing I wanted to ask was, did you guys hear about George Groves getting rid of his trainer?
You mean after his most recent loss? At that point, isn't there an old saying about that, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic after the iceberg?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the trainer is always the first to go and the last to know, you know, in times of strife. And, I mean, you got to figure, you know, you got to do something different. He was a replacement trainer as it was, as I recall. They've been together a few fights. They haven't had winning ways together. I mean, it kind of makes sense to me. It's kind of a bummer. Groves may never be the same after getting knocked out in front of 80,000 people by Carl Froch in Wembley Stadium. You know, it's kind of a bummer to see a guy so young kind of looking around trying to figure out a 20-cent first career.
Yeah, that's true. The fight that Luis Ortiz is getting on the Golovkin-Lemieux card, who is this dude that they found to fight him?
You know, it's like the fourth guy, isn't it? Because you went from Bermain Stavern to Brian Jennings to some other guy, and I don't even know the guy's name, but I understand he's rated because that's important. But when you go down to that third, fourth option, it's like that famous words, the famous phrase from the great Michael Irvin, the playmaker, when he talked about third-string quarterbacks. He said the third-string quarterback is the backup to the backup, which means that guy's probably not that good. Gentlemen, in this case, this is the backup to the backup to the backup. Yeah. Wow. Huh.
Yeah.
Not good.
And I'm surprised nobody's mentioned it. There's a fight going on tomorrow in Tokyo with Chamito Moreno and Yamanaka. I think that's a pretty good fight.
It's a good fight if Moreno has anything left. Moreno was one of my favorite pure boxers of the past 6-7 years. I really thought he was one of the closest things to Pernell Whitaker that you're ever going to see. But last September, right around this time last year, I was in Mesquite, Texas, calling a show for Mike Tyson Productions. I thought he won the fight against the guy I forgot his name, but it's the guy that just recently fought the kid from Cincinnati, the three-time Olympian. Yes, Piano. And I'll be honest with you. It looked to me, Gabe, Moreno lost a little bit off his fastball. Wasn't quite the same guy that it was 3-4 years ago.
Well, I wonder, you know, I mean, he's 30. He's a tall, lanky guy making that weight. You know, it's 5'6" and a half, and he's making, you know, 118. I think that takes something away from you, you know, and he's not big enough to go 122 maybe. Doesn't feel confident in the weight. You know, we'll see in this fight. I mean, we'll see what he's got left. I think that's it. For the small guys, 30 is kind of old.
It's like being a running back in the NFL. There's no doubt about it. Nacho, will you be watching the Wilder-Duopas fight on Saturday night?
You know what? I will not, because I've been watching the last night when I was watching Sunday Night Football, they were advertising it as being a world championship fight on NBC, but it's going to be on NBC SN. So I thought
I think it's regular NBC, isn't it?
No,
I think
it's NBC Sports Network.
Okay, well, I'll have to check on that. I think the biggest indictment of that fight was it's a Deontay Wilder against nobody. It's basically as if this was a solo act. When you advertise a fight card and you do not even mention the B-sides, that usually means you have a gross mismatch.
Well, they didn't say the guy's name, but they did actually put it on the end of the commercial. They did spell out the guy's name. So they didn't say it, but they actually do mention this. I don't even know how to say the guy's name. Do you?
Well, neither does Al Michaels. Someone tweeted at me that he had a tough time spitting out Johnny D. Case
yeah.
last night during the Seattle Green Bay game.
All right, Nacho,
listen.
Your fastball.
Yeah, geez. Yeah. So, all right. So anyway, Nacho, listen. We got to get running. Okay. Enjoy your
all
night.
Right. You too.
Gabe, is there anyone else on the line?
I believe we have cleared the board, Steve.
Yeah, it's obvious that with former Hurricane alumni Andre Johnson and Frank Gore, the public at large is simply just too distracted and focusing. Maybe they pay attention to Andrew Luck and Daryl Revis, but really, of course, it's all about Frank Gore and Andre Johnson. So, Gabe, let's just call it a day. We gave him 80 minutes. We gave him 80 minutes. On a week like this, that's quality over quantity, Gabe.
And it's free, so it makes it even better.
Absolutely. All right, so this is it for this week's edition of The Next Round. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring radio network, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.